We bring you now The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth. Now here's the minister, Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr.
I think a good note on which to begin today is a version of the Christmas story written by people in our third and fourth grade class at Pilgrim Church. Long ago, a baby lay in a manger full of hay. There a baby was with the shepherds all around him, and they came a long, long way. Slowly a star rose from the sky. It was very bright, and that wasn't a lie. The star was up for the birth of Christ, and there they stood all night with the star shining bright. With that introduction, our choir will sing, All My Heart This Night Rejoices. Welcome to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of Pilgrim Congregational Church. These days right now, of course, are very special ones. They are the days when we celebrate that supreme event of history, when at the appointed time the Christ was born. Many times people ask, what is the meaning of Christmas? In trying to answer that question, I've always been at pains to stress this simple fact. Christmas means celebrating the birth of the one we call the Christ. As one of the other children in our third and fourth grade class began his poem for the occasion, Christmas is about Jesus. That's right. Not just about holly and tinsel, nor even just about love and peace, but about Jesus. Unless we pin Christmas down to that basic fact in flesh and blood, it grows more and more vague and rarefied. But many things come out of the birth of that child. There is a spirit that spreads forth from this event. It is out of that spirit that I share with you now a bit of whimsy that I call Christmas Means Someone Whom You Can Help by a Hat. We hear the complaint these days that too much of Christmas lies in the exchanging of gifts. That defect certainly does appear. Sometimes a note of materialism enters in, or the atmosphere of quid pro quo. At other times, the exchange is an empty routine. And yet we know that the giving of gifts can be a way of expressing the profoundest depths of a relationship. It is a challenge to give gifts well, for this task demands much insight into another person's needs and tastes. Only one who gives to another out of the knowledge of love can rise to this challenge. I think, however, that the knowledge of love may face an even greater test in helping others give gifts to themselves. That is to say, it is a formidable mission to try to support others in choosing things for themselves, especially if the thing is bound up with the person's self-image. Let us say, something on the order of a hat. When I was a boy, I used to go with my mother to buy hats. This was an honor accorded to no one else, and so I took my assignment very seriously. The time came when my mother could not buy a hat without me. It is not surprising, then, that I came to consider myself something of an expert, and that the salespeople soon realized that if they were going to sell my mother, they had better sell me. I might seem like a hunted rabbit crouched in the corner on one of those little plush chairs, but my judgment was swift and final, and it could not be altered by flattery, cajolery, or wild claims about the product. "Now this is just the thing for you, madam," the salesperson might say to my mother. "It is very fashionable and yet practical. It goes just right with the shape of your face." And then, as my mother's eye caught mine in the mirror, "Let's see what the young man thinks." "I don't like it." There was no further court of appeal. Of course, I have lost the art now, and the authority too. Hats are not what they used to be, and neither am I. When each of my daughters arrived at the age of 2, I took her out to acquire a proper outfit, including a hat. These are the only decent hats that my daughters ever had, and even today those hats would look better on them than anything they have acquired in later years. But since then, I have had no influence on them, and thus, as I say, I have lost the art. Recently, however, I asked myself how I came to master this art. What was required of me in the rare and delicate undertaking of helping my mother pick out a hat? I decided that some rather fundamental qualities were required, and that consequently helping my mother choose a hat was one of the most formative influences in the development of my character. For example, the first thing that was required of me was that I overcome my prejudices. At an earlier stage in life, I came too quickly to the conclusion that hats were meant to serve a useful purpose. It was very hard for me to come to terms with the reality that at that stage of history, most women's hats served no useful purpose at all. Now, one of the shocking moments of truth arrived one afternoon as I observed a group of women on a summer's day huddled under an awning during a very light rain. "Why are they doing that?" I asked my mother. "Why are they so afraid of a little rain?" "They are protecting their hats," my mother told me. In that instant, I felt that I was up against the surd of life, that great ocean of unreason that forever threatens to swamp us all. I had thought that the purpose of a hat was to protect the head against the elements, and now it appeared that people's heads were rendered inoperable for long stretches of time so that they could protect their hats. Then briefly, I thought I had found the answer. Hats were not meant to be useful, they were meant to be ornamental. I was never crassly utilitarian. From the beginning, the aesthetic side of my nature was uppermost. From the beginning, I liked things to look well. From the beginning, I liked women to look well. The difficulty was that 99 hats out of 100 did not make women look well. They made a woman look funny. At last, I put all my prejudices aside. I came to the conclusion that the kind of hats that my mother wore were just meant to be a silliness. Everyone needs a little nonsense in his or her life, and this was the way some women chose to express their nonsense. The difficulty was that my mother took her nonsense rather seriously. And so the task was to help my mother put a serious silliness on her head that did not make her look foolish. It is hard to imagine any undertaking in which, from the very outset, success seemed more unlikely. It took much more than freedom from prejudice. It took enormous courage. Another quality required of me was patience. Now, let me be frank to say that this has never been my long suit. I took very much to heart a line in a poem by Kipling that my mother hung over my bed. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth the distance run, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you'll be a man, my son. Now, I could never stand procrastination or dilly-dallying or just plain slowness. I've always felt that time itself was far more valuable than the petty profit that comes to us by deliberating too long over most other things. That is why I detest going through a line at a serving table. I cannot understand how most people can spend so much time picking out a single meatball. Still, patience was required of me, and I had more of it then than I have now. The young, you see, can afford patience. They have time. If we went into a department store where the hats were all set out, the process of elimination was almost interminable. I could take in the whole department in one sweeping glance and narrow down to two or three possibilities in a matter of seconds. But my mother did not operate that way. She would walk up slowly to one hat and give it a sideways glance, as if she did not want the hat to notice that she was looking. And then she would walk away, turn around, and sneak back to view the hat from another angle. And next, she would stride very deliberately to another counter and begin the same process with several more hats. Perhaps this was her way of letting the first hat know that it should not get up its hopes too highly. In time, however, in much time, my mother might return to that original hat and go so far as to touch it. Finally, after many more motions hither and yon, she might even try it on. The whole affair was rather like a courtship, except that my mother kept the courtship going with 12 or 14 hats at the same time. Now, if you went into one of those little shops where they keep everything hidden in the back room, even more patience was required. No quick survey was possible, nor could you achieve a sense of progress by walking around and looking at things. You had to sit there while the salesperson brought out one hat at a time. Now, my mother, who was always considerate of people's feelings, felt that she had to give every hat a fair shake. Much patience was required in helping my mother buy a hat. Still another requirement was insight. Insight into my mother's character. You see, my mother thought that she was Rosalind Russell, the actress. Now, she knew that she did not look like Rosalind Russell, but she thought that she was the same type that Rosalind Russell played in those days. Brittle, sooty, witty, sophisticated. The kind of woman that Rosalind Russell played opposite Robert Montgomery. This illusion of my mother's compounded immensely the challenge before me. That my mother might have been an actress was not so far-fetched. Before her marriage, she had a job which took her to Hollywood, and she had met some of the stars, and there she'd even taken a screen test. And yet, had she gone into acting, it was inconceivable to me that she ever would have played the kind of role played by Rosalind Russell. Today I ask myself what she might have played. Perhaps the Good Witch of the North in The Wizard of Oz. Or Heidi. That's it. Even were she alive today, my mother would still be playing Heidi. You can imagine then the challenge. How to help somebody pick out a hat who thinks she is Rosalind Russell, but who is really Heidi. Perhaps you have wondered from time to time, where lies the secret of good taste? Well, let me say that in matters like this, it has very little to do with various theories about art or aesthetics or anything like that. But it has a lot to do with insight into somebody's character. The enterprise of living, now the next thing that is required, was standing by my mother in the crisis of decision. Now this took patience again. Beyond that, it took a willingness to share the agony. The enterprise of living is in large measure the enterprise of making decisions. From the time we get up in the morning until we fall asleep at night, we make them, one decision after another. Some petty, some crucial, but all of them a little painful. For even with the happiest of decisions, there is a moment of pain. Even when you decide to reach for the Hershey bar with almonds in preference to the slightly larger Hershey bar without almonds, there is a twinge of anxiety attended by regret. It is not surprising then that people try to avoid making decisions. Some decide so quickly that they are not deciding at all. They are just throwing the dice. And others put off decision until something happens beyond their own control. My mother could make some decisions quickly, but when it came to hats, the process was prolonged. And it was painful. The expressions she assumed when looking into the mirror broke my heart. You would think that every hat she tried on was a crown of thorns. It is at this point that we face, I think, the true test of friendship. More often than not, we desert people when we see them caught in the agony of making a decision. Both in small things and in large things, we fail that way. We see the person next to us in the office worrying over when to schedule an appointment, and we close our eyes and our ears and our brains. We don't want to share the burden. And so it is with the disciples in Gethsemane. I suppose that the main reason that I did not desert my mother while she agonized over hats was that I had nowhere else to go. I had to stand by, and so I stood as best I could. One more thing was required. After she bought the hat, I had to give her what our United Church Statement of Faith calls presence in trial and rejoicing. Now, the Statement of Faith is talking about God's presence, but it applies to human presence too. Being there when somebody else is in trial or in rejoicing. I had to share my mother's celebration, and yet to be ready to reassure her in the moment of regret. Once we make a purchase, we feel exultant. We are stronger and richer than before. We have become a new creation. We may believe as well that we have sealed one of the shrewdest bargains in history. But then, after a few minutes, a few hours, or possibly even after a few days, comes that sudden, gaping doubt. Without warning, we sink into that bottomless pit of misgiving. "Come, Roy," my mother would say, "we'll go have a soda. I'm so happy about that hat. We'll just go on a little spree." "All right," I would say, "but this place is expensive." "For once, Roy, we'll splurge. What kind do you want? Strawberry?" "Yes, with strawberry cream." "Do you think Daddy will like it?" "I think so." "You don't think he'll laugh at it?" "He thinks all your hats are funny. It doesn't matter." "Do you think it looks funny?" "It's jaunty. It doesn't make you look funny. It's a lot of money. Don't worry about money, Mommy. I just don't know how it will go with my new coat. I think it will go fine. I don't know whether it's dressy enough for the school dinner. It's all right. It's a lot better than your old one that looks like a pear. Maybe that blue one would have been better, you know, with the feather. It wouldn't go. I could take it back. The store won't close for half an hour. I don't want to go back. I don't like it in there. Why, I thought you said it was a nice shop. Yes, but it's all ladies in there. It's a nice hat, Mommy. Let's go home. This was, you see, the greatest of liberal educations. There is no school in the world that can teach a boy anything more important than he can learn in helping his mother pick out a hat. Where else is one challenged to acquire such patience with the behavior of another, such discriminating taste based on insight into character, such courage and empathy in standing by another in the hour of decision and through those ups and downs that follow? It was a very hard school, but the burden was made easier by the fact that my mother helped me buy hats too. What is this all to do with Christmas? Is it not by standing by one another in the agonizing decisions that the greatest gifts are given? Is it not in choosing for and with others that we probe the deepest levels of understanding and trust? The people that we want to be with us at Christmas are the people whom we would trust to help us pick out a hat, and vice versa. In all of this, perhaps, we reflect that rather agonizing choice which God's love made and continues to make through the coming of the Lord. Out of some mystery that no amount of reason can explain, God has chosen us, you and me, as those bits of silliness which are ourselves. And so he calls us, in our own choosing, to reflect the spirit of his own. Put on, then, we read in Colossians, put on, then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassion, kindness, lowliness, meekness, and patience, forbearing one another. And above all, put on love, which binds everything in perfect harmony.
Let our heart of flesh keep silence, and with fear and trembling stand, and when nothing earthly
Tomorrow evening, we'll hold two candlelight services at Pilgrim Church. The first is a family service scheduled for 5 o'clock. The second will be held from 11 o'clock until midnight. Ruth Jacobson, soprano, will sing at the first service, and our choir, under the direction of Ray Baker, will present Christmas music at the late service. You are welcome to come at either time. Our regular Sunday morning worship is held at 10 o'clock. And now may we join together in this closing prayer. It is still a very dark world, O God, in which the star of Christmas shines. We think today of the American hostages in Tehran, of the starving refugees in Cambodia, of people in many parts of the world who are cruelly oppressed, of those shadowed recesses in the lives of people whom we know and in our own lives. In all this darkness, we look again to that light that came into the world with the birth of Jesus Christ. Now again, in this holy season, may we open our hearts to that light and receive the Christ child with faith, joy, and commitment to his way. Let us look to him anew for that wisdom and courage that he can bring us for the living of these days. Amen.
God of grace and God of glory, on thy people pour thy power. From thy ancient church's story, bring her God to glorious power. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of this.
You have been listening to The Living of These Days, the weekly radio service of the Pilgrim Congregational Church, with Dr. Royal F. Shepherd, Jr., the minister. For copies of today's sermon or comments on this program, please contact the Pilgrim Congregational Church, 2310 East 4th Street in Duluth, 55812. And please join us next week at this same time for The Living of These Days.